All right, what's up, everybody? Today I want to talk about philosophy and slavery, specifically the philosopher in contrast to slavery. According to an absolutely fascinating section of Nietzsche's book, The Gay Science, I'm going to read to you some selections, but let me put it in context. If you read Plato, and I've talked about this in a recent essay, if you read Plato, Plato is absolutely clear that you pretty much, as a human being, have to choose whether or not you're going to be a philosopher or else you're going to be a slave. He's really dramatic about it, and he does not pull any punches here. It's a very extraordinary and aggressive ultimatum that he puts to us, essentially. Anything short of the philosophical life is essentially a life of servility. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Most of us spend most of our days doing things for certain rational purposes. But so long as you're optimizing for some kind of external criterion, you're essentially obeying someone else's rules. You're obeying dictates from a vague distributed system of social signals. And that's what most people do, even powerful people, even people who are wealthy, who we consider to be very cool and smart and who have successful lives. Even a lot of those people, if you really look at what they're doing and how they spend their time and what they're working on, a lot of it boils down to a kind of highly embellished servility. It is only philosophy, which is roughly the honest pursuit of the truth, the highest contemplation of the highest things, in leisure, which is a kind of cultivated, disinterested way of being that has no ulterior motives. It is not holding itself to some external criterion that it's trying to optimize for. It is only the philosophical life that is a free life. And so I wrote about this recently. It's very clear in Plato. And in fact, you see this everywhere. You see this in Seneca. We recently read some Seneca in the community, and you see very clear hints of this intuition in his essay on the shortness of life. Even more contemporary theorists like Bataille is sort of very interested in this sort of reign of servility, the generalization of servility that capitalism represents under the guise of freedom. Anyway, I recently came across a very salient and poignant section of Nietzsche, which I want to break down and really analyze in more detail, because I think it's very provocative, but it really explains in more detail and from a unique angle what you have to understand about the difference between philosophy and slavery. If you want to explore the references or save this for reference, just go to the newsletter, otherlife.co, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But ultimately, the upshot is this. If you read Plato and Nietzsche and these great thinkers, and you feel called in any way, if this resonates with you, you have to remember that you have a very different nature than most other people. And you have to constantly remind yourself of that. You need to learn to see slavery everywhere. And you need to learn to be horrified by it. That's the real lesson of Nietzsche's observation here. We modern people have become too familiar with normalized slavery. We've allowed it to infect us. And one of the first requirements to preserving what is most noble in your own soul, to protect and nourish your highest aspirations and the highest form that you're capable of giving to your life, one of the first and most important steps is to become ruthlessly clarified about the difference between slavery and philosophy. And that's what I'm going to try to drive home for you today. In the past, brutal cruelty made its opposite shine brighter. The existence of slavery increased the intensity of noble feeling among those who enjoyed thoughtful leisure. As Nietzsche explains in The Gay Science, quote, "The specific hue which nobility had in the ancient world is absent in ours because the ancient slave is absent from our sensibility. A Greek of noble descent found such immense intermediate stages and such a distance between his own height and that ultimate baseness that he could barely see the slave clearly anymore. Not even Plato could really see him. It is different with us, accustomed as we are to the doctrine of human equality, if not also to equality itself. A creature who is not at its own disposal and who lacks leisure is by no means something despicable to us on that account. Perhaps each of us possesses too much of such slavishness in accordance with the conditions of our social order and activity, which are utterly different from those of the ancients. The Gay Science, Book 1, Number 18. In the abolition come generalization of slavery, we rendered nobility more alien, more difficult to fathom. To even speak of nobility today, it rings hollow, affected. Many people doubt that it means anything at all. And yet it does. It always did. It always will. There are higher ways to live, and there are lower ways to live. Perhaps most alien today is the idea, obvious to great thinkers from Plato to Nietzsche, that the highest form of life is simply the free study of the highest questions. As I discussed in Return to the Future of Classical Education, Plato was emphatic. Anyone concerned with usefulness is essentially a slave. It is only through liberal education, it is only through becoming a philosopher, in other words, that one becomes a truly free man. Philosophy, as the highest way to live, recognizes itself originally in contrast to slavery. As Nietzsche points out, quote, "The Greek philosopher went through life feeling secretly that there were far more slaves than one might think, namely, that everyone who was not a philosopher was a slave. His pride overflowed when he considered that even the mightiest men on earth might be his slaves. This pride, too, is foreign and impossible for us. Not even metaphorically does the word slave possess for us its full force." That's from the same item in the Gay Science. It is only in the modern world that we, today, imagine that a harried businessman lives a higher form of life than, say, a poor tradesman who studies Plato in the evening. If slaves worked the fields, we would not make this mistake, because the poor tradesman studying Plato would more strongly feel the truth that he is higher, and the harried businessman would more strongly feel the truth that he is lower. I do not propose that we revive slavery, but I do propose we become more sensitive toward the slavishness in our midst. Not for clout on social media, not through ridiculous charades of public outrage, but in that area where the most courage is required. In our own lives, with ourselves, with people we know and care about. To be always removing those traces of slavishness within ourselves, so that we once again feel that a creature who is not at its own disposal and who lacks leisure is, indeed, something despicable to us. If we are unable to remember the distance between philosophy and slavery, it is no help or charity to ancient or modern slaves. It is not kind or compassionate to flatter and submit to slavery, past or present. We should learn once again to recoil in horror at modern slaves with that almost otherworldly pride which is proper to philosophy, in order to preserve what might still be noble among us. All right, everybody, thanks for listening today. I hope you found this meaningful. I'm super pumped to be back on the grind. I appreciate all the support and kind words that people sent me after some of my recent podcasts. Other Life is now back to its roots as the weird kind of art project that it probably always has been, probably always should have been. I'm going to keep sharing with you the most interesting ideas that I find in philosophy, social science, my own explorations and reflections. And together as a community of independent readers and writers, we will continue to bootstrap this remarkable, unique network we have going here. All right, that's all for now. Over and out.